Hello, I'm Shelley Craft, and if you dream of building a home among the gum trees, I've got some good news. The Block is making a tree change and a podcast. Each week, I'll pick the judges' brains about the designs, the decisions, and everything else you want to know about contemporary country styling. And as for the Blockheads themselves, hear what they did in exclusive chats with the weekly winners. Make sure you subscribe via Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nine Podcasts.
Hello, this is Neil Mitchell. Well, it's time to sit down, have a chat to a well-known Australian and ask a basic question. What makes you what you are? What drives you? Why are you what you are? Or as I like to put it, what makes you tick? Every Tuesday, what makes you tick? We talk to people. Just have a look at what's behind them, what's made them what they are. Talk to people like Margaret Court, Jason Ackermanis, Gerard Harvey, Madeline West, Sam Newman, Todd Woodbridge. Spoke to the Yellow Wiggle last week, Greg Page. This week, one of the greatest defenders to play Aussie football. Won a premiership with Richmond, best and fairest, five All-Australians. Left the game early to concentrate on his faith and religion. He's an entrepreneur, written kids' books, found his own education program for year 11 and 12. Alex Rance, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
Can you sing and dance?
Not well. I was at a wedding on Thursday, actually, and yeah, I think that really proved how poor of a dancer that I am.
But you didn't. I read you went to a music and arts school from kinder to about year 10. Why?
Yeah. More from the sort of non-denominational side of things. That was one of the schools that was up in the hills in Western Australia called Helena College, and the sport wasn't necessarily number one priority there, but it was, yeah, it certainly developed other areas of my personality and other areas of my skill set, which I think held me in good stead for later in life.
Well, that doesn't include singing and dancing, though.
No, definitely not, no.
But you weren't greatly into footy when you were growing up, were you? Until you were about 12?
Yeah, it didn't start till I was 12, which is, I guess, interesting because my old man, he played. He captained West Coast and played for the Bulldogs and had the footy pedigree. But, yeah, I just played a lot of other things. I did triathlons, played golf, played volleyball, just loved sort of exploring, loved nature, camping, things like that. I was never a footy head, and I still am not really a big footy head. It's just been a different journey to the AFL for me.
And why do you think that is? Why did you not, even as a child, you weren't right into footy? Why not?
Oh, I don't know. I think it just all comes around to, I guess, what you value. I valued spending time with my family, so it didn't really matter what I was doing. That was whether I was kicking the footy with my dad or whether I was herding the sheep or doing something like that. Like, it didn't really matter what I was doing as long as I was with good people and I was felt like it was a wholesome activity. So some people find that deep connection with football and with sport because they have that deep connection with their family members and things like that. So I just had a lot of different opportunities to connect with my family.
It's an unusually mature thing for a child to think, though. You know, I just want to be with my family. That sounds like the executive who's just got sacked from his job and wants to spend more time with his family. It's a very mature thing that you were doing at that age.
Well, I think it all boils down to that as a person. Like, yeah, when you're a kid, you know no better. Whether you're chopping wood or kicking the footy, it doesn't matter because you're with your family, you're with your mum or your dad. You don't discriminate as a kid on the task. All you know is I'm here with my family. So, yeah, I don't think it's necessarily a choice. It's just more brand association, for lack of a better word, that, you know, this is what I do that makes me and my dad connect, or me and my mum connect, or me and my brother connect, or whatever it is.
I've known a few Jehovah's Witnesses over the years as friends, and most of them came from families of Jehovah's Witnesses. Your family, is that where you had the influence to become a witness?
Yeah, so my mum and dad weren't when they were growing up, and they started studying the Bible and found that Jehovah's Witnesses were the ones that were giving them the greatest support and helped them to study the Bible. And then, so, yeah, from early years, I was going to church meetings and looking at the Bible and things like that. But it sort of never was really a big priority in my life at that stage. It was more like a hobby, just something that we did as a family. But it wasn't until sort of later in life that I looked at it more seriously, and I found that it was not just a hobby. It was just not something to do on a Sunday. It's a way of life, and started to sort of apply that in a much more deeper sense. But yeah, it's something that, I guess, people take to it at a different age once they come to an accurate knowledge.
Was it a slow process, or did you feel that you were called? Was there a moment that you said, yep, this is what I am, this is me?
I think it's a slow process that it's not going to be like a lightning bolt moment. There's always going to be penny drop moments, but it's more about application. I think the reality is in life, there's a lot of things that we know are good for us, you know, and no, we shouldn't smoke, no, we shouldn't speed, no, we shouldn't cut corners in some area of our work, but it's whether or not we have enough conviction to actually not do it. And so, you know, for so long, I had this strong feeling and knowledge that there's something bigger out there, that we have to have been created, what happens to us when we die, all those types of questions. But I didn't, because it was a hobby, it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, that's a good question, and I'll just leave it there and I'll carry on with my life. So I didn't dig too much deeper into it until sort of the last, you know, 5-10 years. So.
Well, you started footy at 12, but came to Richmond as an 18-year-old. Were you committed to the church at that stage?
No, so I sort of stopped going when I was, yeah, about 17. I just had other things took my priority, and, yeah, I just was sort of caught the footy bug and yeah, found that that was a way that I could get sort of validation in the world. And, yeah, so it was from sort of 17 to maybe 22 or 3 that I sort of was doing my own thing and not really doing a lot from a spiritual perspective. And then after that, I sort of started thinking about it a lot more and started to make sort of inroads back.
Did that clash with your football or your football culture at any stage?
In some ways it didn't, in some ways it didn't. So off field, it massively supported it, because so much about being a good spiritual person and so much of what the Bible teaches is about love and support and connection and unity and peace and things like that. So that's great for culture and connection off field, but then you contrast that with the person that you need to be on field to be successful, which is competitive, dominant, physical. You know, it sort of flies in the face of it. So it is exhausting to try and switch that person on and off. And I felt quite exhausted and quite conflicted at times on, you know, what person I really wanted to be known for. Is, do I want to be known as this sort of like physical dominant defender that makes people like, you know, I've got to shut someone down to do my job, or do I want to be known as this sort of connector, cultural person and helping people? So it was a challenge, but that's sort of what's ultimately led for me to finish my career early, was that I wanted to do more on the peaceful, loving, caring, supportive side of things rather than the sort of competitive and dominant side of things.
I read that you really disliked game day for that reason. Is that true? Because you played over 200 games, you didn't like it?
Yeah, I didn't at all. Yeah, it was something that I felt I had to do just to sort of, yeah, because I'd always feel guilt. Like I said before, I'd feel torn. I felt guilty if I was overly physical, overly competitive at the end. Like, you know, I might have had a good game, but it still was just like, well, I don't really like the way that I had to treat that person to get there. And it was hard for me sometimes to sort of bridle my competitiveness, because I did want to win and I did want to be successful, but sometimes it was at what cost.
Alex, we're talking to Alex Rance, one of the great defenders, 5-time All-Australian. I remember reading Tony Lockett, one of the greatest full forwards, used to throw up before every game. He was so nervous. Have you ever been through that time?
Yeah, I've thrown up a few times, but I started to get, towards the back end of my career, we did some really amazing work with Emma Murray, talked about focus and mindfulness and controlling our thoughts and emotions, because, you know, if you play in an emotional state, it's going to be boom or bust, whereas if you play in a more process-based thought pattern, then you're going to be far more successful and consistent. So that stopped when I started to get more focused and mindful of the process, rather than focusing on how I'm feeling and if I get 10 kicked on me, or if I don't, or if I play well, or things like that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that sort of put an end to that.
Been reading the book Tom Boyd's just released about the struggle that went on with him, a struggle with mental health issues, which thankfully he seems to be dealing with. But you've had a similar struggle in a sense. If every game day for so many years, you've had this internal battle to go out and behave like a competitive AFL footballer. How did you cope with that? What did it do to your life?
Yeah, it wasn't an internal conflict, but I guess I was very fortunate that I had really great people around me that I feel like I'm quite an introspective person, and I'm a talker, so I could talk my way through it with good people that were around me, and I sort of had different ways of validation to make sure that I knew that I was, you know, still a good person, still a good brother, still a good family member, still a good teammate. It's also about just focusing on the good things rather than focusing on the things that you need to fix and the things that aren't going well. So it can be a challenge, and I've got no doubt, especially at a young age, you know, young AFL players get picked up at 18 years of age and they don't know how to fully control all those thoughts and don't have a really complete idea of the person that they want to be. And so it's being formed on the fly. So it can be a challenge, and I've got no doubt that it's going to have some pretty significant mental health issues going forward if it's not well supported. And I know a lot of clubs are very much on the front foot in terms of supporting that sort of mindfulness, focus, process-driven mentality, and a lot of the successful clubs are reaping the benefits of that.
Did you enjoy the premiership? What was the conflict there within?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it was more relief than anything. I think if you talk to anyone who's won a flag, the first feeling is just like relief. But then the it doesn't take long before, and because this is a continual cycle, and it's sort of the rat race of life, I guess, in general, is as soon as you conquer one mountain, there's another one just pops up straight in front of you. So it's like, can we do it again? So you don't really have long to sort of enjoy the success. But yeah, definitely it was nice reward for effort, and it was nice to now have a tangible thing which connects that the group that we can always come back and say, hey, remember that year or remember that period of time? And that was part of the reason why I wrote the children's books that I did, was to almost be a bit of a time capsule to sort of come back to say that was a cool moment, that was a cool time.
Alex, I'm sure you're aware of, and I've read that you said the player who sledged you the most was Steve Johnson. Stevie J sledged everybody, never shut up, I'm told. But I'm sure you're aware of what happened at the weekend where a young Melbourne player was left in tears by sledging from the Brisbane captain. Is football that cruel? Does it have to be that cruel?
I never thought it needed to be. I'm not sure whether it was because I was a defender, and, you know, any time you get lippy, it always comes back in your face anyway. But I look at some of the best players that I've played against, Buddy Franklin and Josh Kennedy for West Coast. I don't think I ever got in any sort of lippy verbal stashes with them. It was never disrespectful in any way. I didn't really agree with the mind games that verbally needs to happen. Some people do, and, you know, that's their way, but I felt like I just wanted to beat them on their merits rather than sort of trying to pack into their heads. So.
Did anybody ever target you on the basis of your religious beliefs? Because they are unusual in football. Did anybody ever go at you for that?
Nah. I think, for probably two reasons, that I wasn't really that, you know, vocal about it, and not many people would have known about it too much. The world has changed a lot in the last sort of 5 years of what is and isn't acceptable to even go close to talking about. And so I don't think anyone would probably go and have a niggle from that perspective. But it just shows now how fine the line is that I think there's probably no place for it, really, because it's such a minefield.
You must have been a confident young man. You turned up at 18. You shouted at Matthew Richardson on your first day, and you end up in a push and shove with Jack Riewoldt a couple of times. Didn't you get on with Jack?
We're very similar people, Jack and I. That we sort of were like siblings. That we both had very strong opinions. We both weren't afraid to voice our opinions, and so that led to a couple of instances where we got a little bit heated. But that was also part of the sort of competitive side of things.
Wasn't as bad as the Melbourne players in a restaurant in Paran, was it?
No, it wasn't that bad. But
but you were self-confident. You give poor old Richard, you give him a spray when you're 18.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. not one of my prouder moments, but yeah, there was. It's funny when you're a young kid, and this goes to the sort of piece of being 18 and what coming into a professional environment. You have this perspective of what you think a leader is or what professionalism is, but you don't really know. And I just had sort of this probably misguided perspective of what leadership looked like, and I was trying to just, you know, drive standards and things like that. But it was, I just probably needed to learn a bit before I spoke.
How did Richo take it? Because you're a very gentle man in his own way, isn't he?
Like the humble gentleman that he is, he just just took it in his stride and didn't really fight back. And yeah, he was amazing. It was probably the best example to me of what a good leader is, that he said more that he didn't need to say anything than if he had sort of bitten back and put me in my place.
Dustin Martin intrigues me, arguably one of the best players I've ever seen, and I've watched footy for a long time. He's beautiful to watch, but obviously a very complex person. And it shows, as you said, how far we've come, that he's able to take time off for mental health leave and only be treated well for when he has to do that. But what sort of character is he? How did you find him?
Obviously because of the fame that he has earned, he is quite a private person, but he was a phenomenal teammate. I loved every minute of time that I spent with Dusty. He was always pretty quiet. But yeah, he always loved to be around a joke, never liked to be the centre of a joke, but loved to be around a joke. Yeah, I don't ever think I had a negative experience with Dusty. And then he just switched it on game day. Like, he was probably the opposite to me, where he really thrived on game day and loved game day, and that was his free space where he could sort of express himself, whereas I was probably more the off-field expression, where he'd like to sort of do his bit, and then with his way of leading was on field. He complemented the leadership group in a really different way.
Think he'll play on?
I hope so. I think everyone hopes so.
Yeah, I agree.
He's a phenom, so I think he's still got plenty of good footy left in him. He's been through a lot. I haven't been in constant communication with him, but yeah, he's been through a lot in the last year especially. We all have, but yeah, to go from, you know, all the things that he's accomplished, and he puts a lot of work in as well. Like, he doesn't just rock up and it all happens. Like, he puts in a lot of work. So yeah, he's probably well entitled to have a little bit of a break and reset himself, and I'm sure he if he wanted to, he could come back and play some amazing footy.
Tell me about your academy, because this seems to be your future. What is it? How does it work?
So, yeah, we've got three campuses in Essendon, Geelong and Wangaratta, and basically it's for year 11 and 12 boys at this stage, but we're looking to potentially branch out into girls as well. The reason why we started it was we wanted to create passion-based education, where the teachers, the students, the curriculum and the campus is all based around the students' passions. In this circumstance, we're starting with AFL because that's the industry I know. So we've got teachers that love AFL and then all students that love AFL and are passionately engaged towards moving towards that sort of passion field. So whether it's potentially a groundskeeper at an oval or a player or a statistician, so whatever it might be, it's about passionately engaging students in their education. So, yeah, we've got a lot of students going through those three campuses now. And, we've got some experience days coming up in Essendon, Wangaratta and Geelong. You can jump on the website, theacademy.com.au, to book your spot if that's something that you might be interested in, because the last 2 years, I think, have been really challenging for families from an educational perspective, especially in Victoria with homeschooling and things like that. So now's a really good time to think about how can your son maximise the last 2 years of his education to really engage him in what he's doing and give him some meaningful outcomes to what's going to happen after school.
Okay, well, look, good on you. And one of the most character-forming experiences I can imagine is knocking on the door as a Jehovah's Witness to people who probably don't want to see you. How did you handle that?
Yeah, well, obviously it hasn't been done for the last few years because of COVID and things like that. Mm. But, you know, writing letters and doing some phone calls and things like that have been a part of just helping people to find a little bit of stability in a pretty unstable world. So I feel like it is quite a... Nobody really, I think, enjoys public speaking, but when you're passionate about what you are talking about and when you believe that it's really going to benefit other people, you put that emotion aside and you really
But what response did you get, though? People would answer the door and they found you there. They'd recognise you. I assume they'd want to engage, wouldn't they?
Yeah, well, I've had a few interesting conversations and they're not always spiritually based. But at the end of the day, like, it's about connection. Where, you know, the world, you know, has never been more, in inverted commas, connected with social media and the internet and all that kind of stuff. But in so many ways, has never been more disconnected, that we can't talk about and articulate emotions and feelings, and it's such a taboo subject to talk about our beliefs and, you know, ask deeper questions and actually reason on the Bible as a source of evidence to prove whether we believe things or don't believe things. So, I just hope that more people can be open to it and to have a bit more of a discussion. I've had some fantastic discussions with some teammates that have different religious beliefs, and you know, we have open discussions on what we believe is the truth and what we believe is you know, going to happen in the future and things like that.
Great to speak to you. All the best with the Academy, and that's online to check out. Thank you very much for your time, and good luck with it. Thank you for talking to us.
No worries. Thank you.